Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 29th day of April, Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. So, first we should talk about the pledge drive. It's over, so it's safe for you to call in again.
That's the truth, though.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't call in during the pledge drive.
Yeah, because they don't want to be harassed.
Right. We should tell you we did not make our goal. That's two drives in a row that we did not make our goal. So for all of those of you who were kind and generous enough to pledge, thank you so, so very, very much. And for the rest of you, well, there you are. Okay.
It is what it is.
Online pledging is still available.
Yeah, they can.
That's right. You can pledge online at jazz901.org anytime, 24/7, 365.
And we've told you countless ways of doing it, whether it's Pledge-O-Matic or, a one-time gift or spread it out over whatever.
Right.
They'll work with you on it, and it just helps keep programs like ours on the air every week that we come to you, because I hate to break it to you two guys, we're still not going to get paid anything.
Yeah, we didn't get 33 years. We certainly didn't get a raise.
Yeah, we did. Well, these new chairs.
Yeah, these new chairs.
That we can raise up higher. I know you two guys don't care for.
I hate this chair.
The old ones were too low. The new ones are too high.
Yeah.
See, but for me, it's great because it gets me up higher. And
yeah, you can read the board.
Because I'm working the board.
For you, it's good. Yeah.
For you, too.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's the news. Windows 10 might not be dead, but it's nearing the end of the road. Microsoft said Thursday.
It ain't dead yet. I'm feeling much better.
Microsoft said Thursday that the company doesn't plan on releasing any additional feature updates to Windows 10. Now, pay attention. These are feature updates. There will, for a while, still be security updates. So don't call me and say, I don't want Windows 10. I'm still getting updates, so you're an idiot.
Yeah.
These are feature updates.
There's a difference.
You're stuck at whatever Windows 10 has.
And even your security updates for Windows 10 only come out for the newest of Windows 10.
That's right. That's exactly right. So Microsoft said in a blog post, the current version, 22H2, will be the final version of Windows 10, and all additions will remain in support with monthly security update releases through October 2025. Existing business releases will continue to receive updates beyond that date based on their specific life cycle. So again, all of the 22H2 versions will continue to support to have releases for the next couple of years, but security releases.
Yeah,
like I said, not feature
other
releases.
Features. Yeah,
when something new comes out for Windows, you don't get it.
And the security features will only come out for 22H2.
Right.
If you don't have 22H2, you're not going to get them.
That's exactly right. And we all know Windows is already so buggy and holy.
No, really?
Yeah. Microsoft hasn't made any changes to the end-of-life support date for Windows 10. October of 2025 has been the target date to end support for Windows 10 and has been for years. What's new is simply confirming what many suspected, that this current version of Windows 10, version 22H2, would be the last feature release for Windows 10. The latest feature release wasn't even really a feature release, just mainly bug fixes. So you may not get bug fixes. Those are considered features. Hey.
Well, if bugs are features, then bug fixes are features.
That's exactly right. And so, you got a bug in Windows 10. We're getting to the point where if somebody says, I got a problem with Windows 10, the answer is going to be, yep, you do. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Microsoft's Windows 11 2022 update, previously codenamed Windows 11 2H22, is a collection of new features that you Windows 10 people aren't getting, that address many things that many people don't actually use regularly, including accessibility features. Windows 10 is an excellent operating system, however, which has made it difficult to recommend a move. What we do know now, however, is that Windows 11 is the future, for Windows users anyway. Well, yes, we knew that already, but Microsoft is making it official. Sorry, Windows 10 fans, your time is nearing an end. And our poll of the week, it's soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 10 won't receive any more feature updates. Your choices are, I'm already on 11, I'll be upgrading soon, you'll pry 10 from my cold, dead hands, what about 7? Win what now? I don't know, and I don't like any of your choices. So far, we've got 135 votes. Okay, is that right? Wow. And you'll pry 10 for my cold, dead hands is number one at 42.
Yeah, but you know, the one problem that they're going to have, though, is mainly if your computer won't, you know, support Windows 11.
Right.
For to force people, you know, because it doesn't have that chip.
Right.
Because 11 is requiring that one chip.
A TPU chip.
Yeah. And if you've got, you know, a perfectly good working computer, and it's cranking, you know, along with Windows 10, and you're totally just because you're not keeping up with Windows 11, and go out and, you know, spend another couple, you know, $1,000 or so to get another equivalent machine that you currently have.
Right.
You're going to be dead in the
water. Well, Microsoft simply doesn't care. I mean, well, first you should give us a call. Because now it's safe. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. You have to remember, Microsoft doesn't care.
Yeah.
They simply don't care. If you got an old machine, get rid of it. Buy a new one. They don't make money if you update the old machine. They make money if you buy a new machine.
Oh, yeah.
So go out and buy a new machine and help Microsoft, because God knows they don't have enough money.
And the other problem that a lot of people forget to account for is your old software. When you buy a new computer, you may end up needing to buy new software. We've got a bunch of clients that have been using Microsoft Office 2010, 2013, 2011.
Yeah.
Outlook does not support the latest OAuth security protocols.
Right.
And virtually every email service now is requiring these higher security protocols. So you have to upgrade to, Outlook 2021. So that's $150 for the new Office suite. If you know about the one-time purchase version, because Microsoft points you to the $99 a year suite.
Right.
Which is great because you can install it on 6 computers. Most people have one, maybe two.
Right.
And one that they have Office on. So 150 flat. But it looks a little different. It works a little different. We've got this one customer that hates anything that looks different. If the column is sorted a different way, oh, it's different. I can't deal with this.
Yep.
Because when we upgraded him to Windows or to Office 2021, it didn't bring over all his preferences, and we were really mad. It didn't bring over his address book.
Wow.
From 2010 to 2021. It's 11 years. Maybe I can give Microsoft a little bit of that, you know, not upgrading from 11-year-old software. But it was really frustrating to the customer that everything looks different. I wish I hadn't upgraded. Well, then you can't use mail. You have to find a different mail provider until they stop using Outlook.
Right.
Or you have to find a different mail reader. Well, that looks different. Yes.
Yes, it does.
So yeah. What?
There's nothing that can be done about that. Microsoft does not care.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we don't have control over Microsoft. So, yes, some things will look different. It happens. We said this for decades.
And it'll continue.
It happens when you buy a new car. The dashboard looks different. Controls are in different places. You get used to it. Or you don't drive anymore. Once your old car dies, you either get a new car and get used to it, or you stop driving. Those are your two choices.
There are cars coming that's in high-end models now, and it's working down to the average, everyday cars, where the whole dashboard is glass.
Yeah.
It's like the glass cockpit in an airplane. It's a glass dashboard.
Well, look at the space shuttles
everywhere.
And all that nowadays.
Right. Yeah.
They used to be surrounded with all these controls. Now it's down to just these couple of screens.
Hundreds of gauges and dials, yeah.
The problem I have with that is you need some physical buttons, because otherwise you take your eyes off the road for everything you do.
Well, then
I think
then
that's
they're going
bad.
To the heads-up display so it can project on your windscreen.
You still have to. Well, then you're doing this.
Yeah.
Whatever you're doing, you're taking your eyes off the road.
Yeah.
And I think that's bad.
That's not good.
You know, I can do everything on my car. I can do the heat. I can do, you know, I can do whatever. I got to change the station.
It's all muscle memory now.
It's all muscle memory because I know where everything is. If everything's on just a push, an icon, then I got to go look for that icon. I can't feel for it.
Heaven forbid they put the smart assistance in it. No, turn the radio down. Did you want to run off the road?
Well, on mine, I can sit there. There's a number of controls in the steering wheel.
Yes.
Like there's buttons underneath on the underside of the steering wheel that you can, you know, change a station.
Right.
Up and mute stuff or that type of stuff.
Yeah, but they're trying to get rid of all of that and put it on the
The glass. No, that's dangerous.
That's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Alan from Rochester, New York. What's up?
Hey, guys. Good to see you're full of energy and ready for a rant.
Exactly.
Hey, just a trivia. I'm almost embarrassed to call, but when you announced the results of the poll, because I always go in early and take a look and see what's going on, and I'd gone in a couple hours ago. It was just 24 people had responded. And then you said 140, and I said, oh, that's great. So I hit the refresh button, and it stayed 24. My Firefox did not refresh the page.
I know. That's very weird. And I've put in all the headers that say this is not to be cached. You must update every time, blah, blah, blah. And it still seems to be a problem. And I don't quite know what to do at this point with Firefox. It is a Firefox issue.
Ah. Well, that's good. So at least it's not my worry. I can let somebody else worry about it.
Yeah, the person worrying about it seems to be me, but I don't know what to do. I've done all the recommended stuff, the pragmas and all the everything in the headers for the page, and it still doesn't...
You need a special code that says, if Firefox, then tell them they're an idiot and force them to refresh the page somehow.
Right. And it's a caching issue, and I've got the pragma that says no cache. So I'm not entirely sure why there's a cache. Clearly, Firefox is just ignoring it.
Yeah, they're...
So I don't quite know what to do about that.
No, that's interesting. In Firefox now, when I refresh, it says 145, and in Safari, it says 144.
Well, refresh Safari again, you'll get 145.
Let me try that. Refresh. Firefox must send information that will repeat any action that was performed earlier.
Yeah, because you voted, and then... It's doing the same thing. So what you do instead is just go up to the line, click on the line on the URL line, and hit enter.
Now I can vote again.
Yeah. there's all kinds of issues going on right
crazy
now.
Crazy Firefox.
I don't know what it is.
It is what it is.
You need to add Firefox to your WordPress statement at the top.
Yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. But yeah, I agree, Al. That's an issue that I don't know how to solve at the moment.
Well, the good news is, and I do mean good news for me, is that it's not an issue with me. So,
yeah, nothing you can do.
Nope.
Right.
Hey, and I want to also throw in a comment about the car controls and et cetera.
Yeah.
Nick, you're right. We just got a Kia, and it has a glass dash, and it's all computer display, and it's kind of neat, but... On the other hand, we have so many buttons and switches and things on the steering wheel and the stalks. Let me put it this way. I convinced my wife to sit down and look at the 400-page
unit
that comes with the car.
Yeah.
And actually try and learn some of this stuff because she was lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and I am not exaggerating. It is 400 pages. It is about an inch and a half thick.
We drove my wife's new Toyota to Florida a couple weeks ago, and she set her coffee cup down on the center console instead of the cup holder, and a light came on my dashboard while I'm driving. What's that light? What does it mean? What's happening? She shifted into some other driving mode accidentally because there's 100 buttons on the center console too.
Right, right, right.
Not just up on your dashboard, but on the center. So if you miss the cup holder, you're going to push some button and do some crazy thing.
Just because they can doesn't mean they should.
Yeah.
Yep. And I should add that there's a separate 40-page just for the infotainment.
Yeah.
Infotainment. You know, because the one thing you really need when you're driving is a movie.
Yeah.
Well, you can decide which gauges to put up. You know, I want to see the tachometer really big. Vroom, vroom.
Vroom, vroom.
Okay. Well, I'll leave you guys in peace and quiet and harmony. So yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Take care.
I don't know where we're going to find that, but thank you. Have fun, Al.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I don't... I love my Nissan Cube. But it is from 2009. So it's 14 years old. So I've been looking
around.
How
many miles on it?
Only 189.
Oh, that's
in there.
That is, no. Whoa.
Once I retired, I come here once a week.
Yeah.
And a couple other places. That's it. My wife and my daughter drive my car more than I do.
Now, I know the feeling. I mean, I got a 2020 Ford Escape, and it's only got 11,000 miles on it.
Yep. I get, from my daughter, I get text messages. Dad, you're out of gas. Thanks, honey.
Well, then buy some.
Yeah. That never stops. How old is she now? That never stops, right?
That never stops. You have a lot to look forward to.
Don't leave your car the last one in the driveway.
Right.
Make sure it's yours is first, and then you won't drive it.
That's right. Yeah, she likes driving my car. My car it's a Nissan Cube, and it's only got a four-cylinder engine, but it's zippy, and it's responsive, and it's a great... I wish they still made them. I'd buy another one in a hot New York minute. I love that car.
You know the key thing, though, is it gets you from point A to point B.
Every day.
That's all it's got to do.
Yep, yep. And really, all I've replaced a couple of mufflers, the exhaust system. That's it. That's really, tires and oil.
Yeah, that's normal wear and tear.
Really, the only thing, and the back windshield wiper. I'm just leaving it the way it is because it's a ludicrously expensive thing.
Yeah, those things are.
Yeah,
we don't even.
I'm just leaving it.
I've been reading some interesting articles on hypercars. We're beyond supercars now.
We have
hypercars. They're pushing 300 miles an hour. Pretty much any supercar can get to 200 miles an hour.
Yep.
The hypercars are 250, and they're encroaching on that 300 mile an hour mark. So, the Bugatti Veyron with a 1,200 horsepower engine can do 250. The Chiron has got a 1,400 horsepower engine, and it can only do 270. So there was an interesting article on the technology of how many horsepower it gets to 100. You can do 100 miles an hour with like 100 horsepower. 200, you need 1,000 horsepower. 300, you need maybe 2,000 horsepower. So the to get incremental gains on how much.
Or just an electric engine.
Well, that's
an electric motor, rather.
My place is looking at electric cars because currently we use a lot of the Dodge Caravans.
Yep.
They don't make them anymore.
That's right.
So they're looking at the electric cars, too, because on an average, I say I do anywhere from 175 to 200 miles a day.
Well within the range of an electric car.
Yeah, sit there and do up a bunch of and the amount of gas.
Yep.
And wear and tear.
You want to look at the Canoo, Canoo. You want to look at their passenger model van. I'm cool. Serious. Go look at it.
I will.
It is amazing.
What's the price tag?
Oh, I don't even know. It's not like I'm going to buy one. I didn't pay attention to that. I just saw a picture of the interior, so I had to go find a couple of YouTube videos.
Oh, okay.
On what it looks like. It's amazing.
Weird looking.
Yeah. Well, look at the interior. The seats on the inside are a U shape all the way around.
Yeah, because the whole car is a U.
Yeah, so it's like sitting in your living room, and there are two jump seats that come down from the door, so you can fit two more people. And it's very and there's a that's the passenger model, and then there's a
cargo
model. So
I searched for a dollar sign, not found.
Yeah,
nowhere on the page does it give the price.
Yeah, I don't know. Well,
if
they're
you
not,
have to ask, you can't afford it.
Are they shipping yet? It's gonna be yeah.
Yeah. So, but just to take a look at the interior of that thing, it's hysterical.
There we go. The lifestyle vehicle starting at $39,900.
There you go. $40,000. Not bad.
200 mile range.
Now, what year did you say your vehicle was?
2009.
My van, for work is a 2017.
Yeah.
$195,000.
Yeah. Well, you drive it. That's why. Yeah.
We go, matter of fact, we got some that go up to a couple that are over $300,000. We put the series, and they're great running cars. I mean, they wind up selling them after, and they're still, because our mechanics are great. I mean, they're every 6 weeks they're doing the maintenance on them and that, and people are still driving them around even after we've put over 300,000.
Gone are the days like my Chevy Bel Air, my '68 Chevy Bel Air. Aside from about once every 3 years putting oil in it, I didn't touch anything, and it ran like a top that whole time. That they don't make those anymore.
My 57 Ford, it was a Block 6.
Yep.
And that thing, you know, the body was rotting away, rusting away.
Yes.
The engine was still going great.
Yep. The only problem I ever had with the old Chevys was motor mounts. And those were, I mean, once they got, they'd come not tightened down for whatever reason. They'd get loose. You take it to the mechanic and they tighten them down and they put the Loctite on them and all of that stuff. They never gave you a problem after that. But that's the first thing you do with a Chevy. Back in the day, you took it to a shop and had them
tighten
the bolts.
I had,
the motor
had
mounts.
Trouble with the motor mounts on my big V8 Dodge when I was in college. Revving the engine, you could see the whole engine just sort of try to jump out of
shift from side to side.
Yep.
As you're revving it up.
72 land yacht.
Yep.
We could fit 15 people in that car.
Yeah. Yeah. In my Chevy Bel Air, I could fit 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Well, about 11 if they were cozy and friendly.
Three in the back window alone.
Right. I forgot the back window.
And the trunk.
And the trunk.
Remember the drive-ins that you used to sneak, put people in the trunk?
We used to take an entire theater troupe, 6 people, all the props, all the costumes, all the sets in that Chevy Bel Air. Drove all over New York State doing shows in schools. It was a 3 on the tree. I loved that car. Golly, man,
I miss also
car.
The manual chokes.
I don't miss that.
Oh,
that's a pain in the patoot.
No, but I used to love it because during the winter months, my 57 Ford, during the winter months, you know, the cars weren't always, I could go out there, hit the gas twice, pull the choke out just a little bit, crank it, and start every time.
Yep.
My dad used to get so ticked off, but I took care of my car.
That's right.
You know, I'd go out there, and matter of fact, there was a number of times he yelled out, David, get up. I need you to help me jump start the car. Because he wouldn't do it. I could go out there and shove off the snow off my car.
Now you do that to your lawnmower.
Right.
Put a nitrous injector on your lawnmower so you can pop wheel and go. And there are lawnmower races.
There are that. That's true.
Yeah.
But, there's, I think the whole idea behind the new dashboards is really lovely, but they need to tone it down. Like the Chevy Bolt, which they're going to stop making. The Chevy Bolt, all the important controls are still physical.
Okay.
So you can do the atmosphere stuff and all of that physically right off the dashboard without having to take your eyes off the road. And I think that's important. Everything else, you know, all the things that, you know, you want to set your channel, whatever, you can do that through voice or you can do that through whatever. But, actually doing the atmosphere and the things that you do regularly in the car all day, you should have physical buttons for.
I've actually started hearing some car companies are not including CarPlay or Google Play, Apple CarPlay or Google, in like the 2025 models, because they're putting these fancy dashboards in themselves.
Oh, yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can call us still. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800- 7900415. And since the pledge drive is over, it's safe to call. You cowards. You might think twice.
Because we did fall short of our goal.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. So there will be changes again. It's two in a row. You might think twice before typing anything into Microsoft's Edge browser as an apparent bug in a recent release of Redmond's Chromium clone appears to be funneling URLs you visit back to the Bing API. The issue appears to be related to an opt-out content aggregation feature in Edge called Collections, which offers suggestions for online creators that users may want to follow. However, beginning with Microsoft Edge build 112.0.1722.34.leftelbow.j, the default behavior has changed. In prior versions of Edge, the feature was limited to a subset of social media sites, including YouTube and Pinterest. Now the scope appears to be wider. From what we can tell, it works a bit like this. On whitelisted pages, the URL would be sent to the Bing API to determine whether a recommendation pop-up should be put in your browser. Well, their browser that you're using. This recommendation would appear in the user's address bar. If the user clicks through the pop-up, content from that creator would then be added to and curated in Edge's collections feature. However, as of April 7th release of Edge, all URLs entered into the address bar appear to be sent to the Bing API, allowing Microsoft to monitor Edge's users' online activities if it so chooses. If it so chooses.
Gee, you think it might?
In response to questions, Microsoft's spokesrobot said it was aware of reports, are investigating, and will take appropriate action to address any issues. If you're worried about Edge leaking every page you visit to Bing, disabling the functionality by navigating to the Privacy Search and Services tab on the Settings page and unticking Show Suggestions to Follow Creators in Microsoft Edge near the bottom of the page ought to mitigate the problem. However, if you're really worried, you can always just use another browser. Despite offering a wealth of privacy toggles, Microsoft's Edge hasn't always been the greatest, hasn't always had the greatest reputation for users' privacy. In a 2012 paper, Trinity College professor Douglas Leith found that Edge was among the most invasive browsers on the market, partially due to the use of hardware identifiers. That said, Edge is hardly the only browser to run into a privacy or security breaking bug in recent history. Earlier this month, Google released an emergency update to Chrome to address a zero-day vulnerability that could be exploited to hijack a user's device. It also patched another zero-day just the other day, but it did patch them, unlike Microsoft, who seems to put them in on purpose. So, how sure are you that your browser isn't a narc? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Just like Steve did from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I am not sitting in my 09 Lincoln Town Car with a bench seat. I'm calling from home.
I see. Bench seats, man, they were the best.
Especially if you had a girlfriend.
Uh-huh. And every time you went through an SOB curve.
That's right.
For those of you who don't know, an SOB curve is a slide over, baby.
I hadn't heard that one.
Good. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
So what's up, Steve?
And before lap belts, when you had to put your arm out to stop them from falling forward.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Damn those lap belts.
Yeah.
Since Windows 8, and I'm doing 10 now, and I will eventually, I guess, go to 11, every time I've gone into safe mode and tried to do safe mode with networking, I never get the icon to connect to my Wi-Fi.
Correct.
I basically can never get safe mode with networking.
Safe right. mode with networking only works with Ethernet.
Yep.
Because it doesn't load any of the drivers for Wi-Fi.
Right.
Well, I wish it wasn't that easy to answer the question.
Sorry.
Life is actually easy for this part of Windows, believe it or not.
Okay, well.
That's simply the answer. It's only Ethernet.
And it will, okay. So I guess I need to walk downstairs and unplug the router and plug it into. All right.
Yeah, because
string a new Ethernet wire.
Yeah, it just tries to do everything in the simplest form, even down to video. It's not doing the high-res video,
right,
you know, sound systems and everything else. It's all plain vanilla stuff, just the basic stuff to run Windows.
And it, your answer makes all kind of sense, but I've been dealing with this since 8, and so I'm...
Time to take a nap.
Yeah.
Well,
nap time.
Yeah.
We like nap time.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a good day. I wish you gave me a different answer, but you gave me what you got.
Yeah, exactly.
It's working as expected.
Right.
Is what it is.
And I'm so happy that Windows is actually doing that. Working as
yep.
That's rare enough, isn't it?
Yep.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Yeah, one other thing, though, Steve. You say you went from Windows 8 to Windows 10?
Yeah.
I double-checked, though. I don't think that machine then, if it went from 8 to 10, that it's going to go to 11.
No. I have one that won't. But I meant that it was happening when I was using Windows 8.
Oh, okay.
So that's on me.
Yeah. No, that's one thing I received a few weeks ago when my one new machine that I just got is running Windows 10, and Windows 11 said, "Oh, sorry, you don't qualify for Windows 11. I go, yay!
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
No, thank you, guys.
That's fun.
Yeah, especially if you've had your computer for a long time, you might have started out with 7 and upgraded to 8 and then upgraded to 10. And then it's every time you upgrade, you can add more complications.
Right. And the other part of the problem, there it is up there.
Well, there it
is. The other part of the problem is you don't have... I don't remember what I was going to say because we were looking at the thing that Dave was finding. What were you just saying? Oh, yeah. If you bought if you bought an inexpensive laptop back in Windows 8, even in Windows 10, the likelihood that you will be able to go to Windows 11 is very low.
Slim to none.
It's because of the trusted platform module.
Yeah.
And you know, the enough power, frankly, to do Windows 11. And like I said, for quite a while, I was taking old laptops and refurbishing and reconfiguring them for refugees, and almost none of them would run Windows. I mean, you measure response time with a calendar.
Yeah.
And so, but you know, they'll all run Linux. And you know, to more or less speed, right, depending on the processor, but they'll all run Linux, at least some version of Linux. And so there's life, and of course Flex, Flex, which is Google's Chrome Flex, which turns an old PC essentially into a Chromebook. That's available. So there's life in old machines, just not Windows life.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. The Linux can look so much like Windows. If folks are that, you know, hard-pressed that they got to have their Windows, it can even look like a Mac.
Yep. You can make it look like anything you want, including like nothing that's ever existed on Earth before.
And to sit there and say, well, they probably don't have many programs. You'll go blind looking at all the listings of programs that are out there available to do things.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You could probably spend a month just searching out all the various programs that are able to run on Linux and not hit them all.
Yeah, so there might be only 1,000 word processors on Linux instead of the 2,000 there are on Windows.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But actually, you'll be able to run tens, if not hundreds of thousands of programs on Linux.
And faster.
And free.
And the other big thing is less chance of getting spyware, malware.
Yep.
Updates, usually come overnight and do it in the background and it just does it automatically.
Right.
That your system always stays protected.
Right.
Yeah, we had a customer this week bring in a 10-year-old Lenovo. He said, it's running really, really slow. Can you copy all my files so I can put it on my wife's brand new Mac? I said, yeah, we can do that. So I get into the computer. 10-year-old Lenovo, it's a dual i5, 4 gigs of RAM, running Windows 10.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's slow.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, we've said this before, the price of poker keeps going up, mm-hmm. and the minimum for Windows 11 now is 8 gig. I mean, they'll tell you, actually, one place it said it would run in 1 gig. Well, it will, actually.
Yeah.
It'll boot in 1 gig,
mm-hmm.
But you'll grow old watching it happen.
I was going to say, in a day and a half, it will.
Yeah.
We had another customer coming in looking to get a new computer, and they're using an Architect program. And so I look up the specs. Minimum requirement, 8 gigs of RAM. Okay. Recommended, 32.
Yeah, yeah.
then 8 isn't really a minimum then, is it?
No, it really isn't. And that's, I'm afraid that that's the wave of the future. Again, Microsoft does not care.
Mm-mm.
They spend a lot of money buying everybody the hottest, greatest, newest. All their programmers have the newest, fastest, hottest, most maxed out machines.
Yeah.
And that's what they write their code to. And if you don't have that, they don't care. Whereas Linux at least tries to keep you reasonable, I suppose, is the way to put it.
Well, it's a wide open community that everybody's right. trying to help everybody else, you know, and keep up to date. If they find a bug or something, there's a team there that just get in and jump on it like crazy to resolve the issue. You know, they know that there's an issue and boom, they want to solve it quickly.
Right.
Not months like Microsoft.
And if you've got a very old machine, you can run Puppy Linux. And Puppy Linux, I mean, take a look at the thing. It looks great. It runs great. If you've got a very old machine, I mean, the whole size of the system is 300 meg.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at the high end. You know, you leave out a couple of things and it's much less. But you can do pretty much everything on it. Yes, you're going to have to use different programs. But you can do dang near anything. There was a version of Linux that I cannot remember that used, what is it called, NCARS as its front end?
LCARS.
LCARS.
You can buy LCARS Plexi strips now, light up Plexi art to post on your wall. And when Mike Okuda rebuilt LCARS for the new Picard series, they added some new little hidden Easter eggs that you can't see unless you zoom way in on it.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jim?
A few days ago, I had no trouble getting YouTube on my old Samsung phone. And a couple days ago, I don't know if they changed something, but not getting any videos on YouTube, and they said can't do it on the current app and watch on the new app. What's going on with YouTube the last couple of days?
YouTube, Google has put out a new version of the YouTube app. The problem is, are you using the Google version or are you using the Samsung version? You see, one of the things that Samsung, I should be home in bed. That's a simple fact of life. One of the things that Samsung does is it replaces almost all the standard Google apps with their own versions. So everything, messages is one of the big problems that people have because it doesn't back up the same way, doesn't do a lot of things the same way. So if you are using Samsung's Google app, it may not yet have updated. And honestly, there's nothing you can do about that except either wait or replace it with the official Google YouTube app.
Okay. The model I got is a 3-year-old Samsung Galaxy A10e. So if I want to start watching videos on YouTube again, you know, what am I supposed to do? What do I do?
Does the YouTube website work?
Yeah, YouTube actually comes up, and the only videos that it's playing, it plays the little shorts. But most of the other videos, you try and tap on there, just like I've been doing for the last 3 years, and all of a sudden a couple of days ago says that it won't show probably about 99% of those videos.
On the YouTube website or in the YouTube app?
This would be, actually, I tried both, and it seems to both be doing the same thing.
Okay, here's what you can try. Now, I'm not going to make a promise, but obviously the first thing you do is force restart your device, and that's pressing and holding the volume down and power keys together for 10 seconds or more until it starts to reboot. And that, what that does, as opposed to a regular restart, its memory will be refreshed and apps and services will all be reloaded as opposed to just brought back in the way they were running before. So it's the clean restart with a force.
It flushes reboot. The memory and forces right. it to re-memorize everything.
Right. If that doesn't work, then you want to flush the cache for YouTube. So for that one, swipe down from the top of the screen, which pulls down that notification panel. Go to Settings, Apps, find your YouTube app, tap Storage, tap Clear Cache, then tap Clear Data, which means you'll have to sign in to YouTube again.
I'm going to post a link.
And then tap OK. Okay, so
he's, did you find the one from Android Guy?
No, I found the one from the cell guy. It doesn't matter. They're all the same.
Well, ironically, the one from the Android guy is here's how to stop you or to make YouTube videos play, and it says video content unavailable. But then lists all the text ways to do it.
right. So there's just a bunch of different ways. Then if that doesn't work, you can update the YouTube app, which you may be able to do through settings. Again, these will all be posted in the link that Steve is posting. You can delete the system cache entirely. You can reset the whole phone. The problem is the A10 is not a particularly, powerful phone, and it's compounded by the fact that, Samsung replaces most of the Google apps with their own versions, which are not quite the same. But those are some things to try. Like I said, Steve will post that link on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you should be able to go through those procedures one at a time. They seem to be listed from least destructive to most. So try those.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yep. Good luck. Again, that comes down to the same problem we were talking about with Windows. If you bought a less capable machine, a lot of the new stuff may not be able to work. And there's just no way around that. You know, that's how it works.
Could it be the HTML5 codec? Because I know a lot of the older videos were in an older format, and Google,
the real old ones are in Flash.
Yeah, and Google's been re-encoding them in HTML5, and then the re-encoding some of those in what is it, VP8?
Yes,
Google's own format,
right? And WebMP.
Yeah, that shouldn't stop all videos from playing, just the older ones that haven't been re-encoded yet.
Right, but well, except that maybe those are the ones he's seeing.
Yeah.
Right. So. It would mean that he can't run the new ones, but he could still run the old ones. But if he's looking at new stuff, he won't be able to run it.
Yeah.
And again, that comes down to Samsung's going to have to update their app. Okay, we got a couple of minutes. We'll talk to Christine from Brockport, New York. Hi, Christine. What's up?
Hi, guys. I talked to you, it was quite some time ago, asking about an old Lenovo laptop and wiping it, you know, changing it over to Linux because it was a mess, right? It wasn't working.
Right.
And I hadn't gotten to do it, and so I've kind of forgotten what I needed to do, but I went on your site, and I also was hoping you could tell me what a distro is.
Bistro. No, a distro. It's short for distribution.
Oh,
and it's just the short name that the Leet Hexors use to call a distribution. So Ubuntu is a Xubuntu is a distro. Linux Mint is a distro. It's a distribution of Linux. And that's all that means. And in terms of going to Linux, the easiest way to do that is to download the distribution that you like the best, put it on a thumb drive, and then in your Lenovo, the problem is if your Lenovo won't boot from the thumb drive.
You may have to go into your BIOS and turn on USB legacy support,
right,
to let it boot from a from an external drive.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then you might have to set the boot order to boot from that first. Now that's a security issue, right? Because it means anybody can plug anything into your machine and do it. So what you do is you set it to that, turn on your install Linux, and then you turn that off again.
Okay,
but that's the in a nutshell, and we'll put up a couple links on a link on how to do that. But in a nutshell, what you do is you download the distribution you like, burn it to a thumb drive, not just move it to a thumb drive, burn it to a thumb drive, and there will be instructions in the link we give you on how to do that. And then you boot with that drive, and you get a choice that says, "Oh, do you want to install Linux or just play with it?" You say install, and then it says, okay, I see there's Windows on this machine. Do you want to put it up there alongside Windows or instead of Windows? It basically, add it in or replace. And you would say replace, and then you just sit and wait until it's done. Well, you're going to put in your name and your password and all of that stuff.
The one thing, though, if she's unsure what flavor she wants, she might just want to first try it out, you know, play with it before installing it.
Right.
You can run right from the flash drive.
Yeah,
because
there's so many versions.
Now, they're going to be really slow because every time you try to do something, it's got to pull it off that slow flash drive and then decompress it. So don't judge the speed of the system by how it works off the thumb drive.
Okay.
But as to, you know, again, there are a lot of versions of Linux, and there's a lot of choices out there, and if you go to distrowatch.com, you should find a list of a bunch of them and the sort of things that they'll do.
Okay, so is a distro, it's like a version of Linux?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. I'll look for those links, and I definitely want to get this done, so appreciate it.
Thanks. Absolutely.
Have fun.
Good luck and have fun.
Yeah, the first step is choose a Linux distro and download it. And then first you'll need to choose a Linux distro. And that takes you to another page. The best Linux distributions are beginners.
Yeah. but there are a lot of good Linux distributions. Some of them are designed specifically for gurus, and some of them are designed for beginners. So take a look at the beginner ones. And you'll find a bunch that are quite useful and quite pleasant to run, actually. And again, you know, you're going to be learning some different things, but the things you learn will be, you'll quite quickly see, oh, this is just like that, right? This thing on Linux is just like that thing was on Windows. I get it. So you'll get there. All right. That music tells us you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but do not go away. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright. A whole nother hour of Steve Ray.
Sorry.
And a whole nother hour of Nick Francesco. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. As we said, the pledge drive is over, so it's safe to call in. But we will be back in just a couple of minutes. Take a quick bio break. But don't forget to come back. There's a whole nother hour of Soundbites coming. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Francis, where are you calling from?
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
It's France.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 5 minutes after the hour. You're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. For those of you just tuning in, we should tell you that the pledge drive is over, so it's safe for you to call in again. We did not make our goal for the second time in a row. We would like to thank everybody who pledged. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much. And as for the rest of you, well, there you are. Let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Francis from Webster, New York. What's up, Francis?
Hi. My wife's iPhone and my iPhone, I back up to our PC, Windows PC. It will not recognize either phone now, and I suspect it might be because of the 22H2 that Windows updated automatically. And I've gone through, researching it and checked the USB ports. They're fine. It recognizes flash drives. It just won't recognize the iPhone. I've uninstalled iTunes, reinstalled it, stopped and restarted the iTunes mobile device server, and I can't figure out what it is.
Did you download the most recent version of iTunes? To reinstall with?
Yes.
Okay.
I went to the Apple site and downloaded the latest one. Go ahead.
I say when you plug the phone in, you should get a trust option on the computer and the phone.
We don't get that. And usually the Windows little in the right hand lower corner, you'll get the little pop up saying, tell Windows what you want to do with this device. You just ignore that. That doesn't come up either.
And sometimes you might even hear a chirp as it detects a USB device.
No, I'm dead. So I'm suspecting that 22H2 update. My question is, can I back out of that update and go back to the previous?
Do a rollback. If you go to Restore Point, you can go to look for a System Restore Point, and select that to go back the date before that was installed.
Okay.
Have you tried a different cable or a different USB port?
I've tried two brand new cables that we had in old phone boxes, from Apple, and it's definitely not the cable.
Does the phone show a charging icon?
Not on the computer. It does when we charge it.
But on the phone. When the phone is plugged into the computer, it should charge from the computer.
No, it's not doing that either.
So that something in the USB driver isn't seeing it.
Windows recently put out to the Windows insiders, the beta test users, a program called Phone Link for iPhone.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading about that.
Actually, I think it's called Phone Link for iOS. But basically it's Phone Link for iPhones and iPads, right? And that may now be required, but I don't know if it's been released outside of the preview people.
I've been seeing a bunch of blog entries on it, so it may have been.
So you may need to look for that in the Microsoft Store and install that.
3 days ago, they released it to the public.
There you go.
Okay. I think first I'll try the rollback, see if that fixes it, because then there is a feedback site for Microsoft to let them know about issues with the new update.
Well, the problem with doing that is that it will eventually update again.
Oh, right. Well, I paused updates. It let me pause it for 5 weeks.
So. Right.
And then we'll go from there. But, yeah, and what is that? I'll look for your... link.
Yeah, Steve will post a link, but it's called Phone Link for iOS.
And one of the big things it adds is limited support for sending iMessages on Windows.
Right.
Okay. All right. Good enough. Thank you.
Good luck.
You're welcome. Oh, and I did donate, and you doubled my donation.
God bless you. We love to hear that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Ooh, that water's cold. I like it. Yeah.
That's not fair to call Dunkin's coffee water.
No, this is actual. I finished the coffee. Now I'm drinking the water.
I know it might be weak coffee. No.
Yeah. Well, it's not my favorite coffee, but it's coffee.
Gee, you should go to market. I think there's a coffee shop.
I didn't get to go to market. Why do you think I'm wearing a white shirt? I didn't get to go to market today. I had other pressing issues, so I did not go to market.
Well, I was going
to
say, you know, you could get some probably good coffee there.
Yes, you can. Some exceptionally good coffee there. But at any rate, if you are looking for Linux distributions to try on an old machine, it's a great way to resurrect an old computer. You've got, you know, a computer that's been sitting in the closet. Maybe it's got 4 gig of RAM, 2 gig of RAM, an older processor, whatever. And it's just sitting there. You can, I suppose, throw it away. Well, recycle it correctly. But you can also dig it out of the closet and try Linux on it. Why not get some use out of it and play around with it? So,
and that's the fun part of the fun part about it is that you can go ahead and install it. And if something gets mucked up, oh, well, you just start over again. I mean, there's, you know, you're using it just to play around with and gain experience.
And that's the advantage of doing it on an extra computer that isn't your main computer.
Right.
So that's exactly, you don't have to worry about losing anything important.
So, yeah, there's
Joe, where are you calling from?
A lot of old machines sitting around.
Hey, hold on, Joe.
And people don't know what to do with them. They just throw them in a closet. They throw them in the basement. They just leave them there. Use them. Play around with them. Learn a little something. Keep your brain active. Enjoy what you're doing. Makes sense to me that way. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Brighton, New York. What's up, Joe?
Yeah, this has to do with Gmail. On my Mac Mini, when I go to compose, I cannot make paragraphs. The enter button doesn't seem to do anything, so everything comes out as one long sentence. Now, this works fine on my Linux. So I was wondering what's going on with this Mac.
You should use the return button to make new paragraphs, not the enter button.
Oh, I see. It's a different keyboard. I have
And are you using the Gmail website or are you using a mail app?
The Gmail website.
Yeah, that's working in my Safari at the moment.
What browser are you using?
Browser.
Safari, Chrome, Gmail. Firefox.
Oh, Chrome. Yeah.
Let me try it in Chrome.
That's
Chrome's browser should work perfectly with Chrome's Google's email program. Yeah.
You would certainly think so. But you're saying you're using a third party keyboard?
Yeah.
The problem may be in the way that the Mac interprets the keystrokes.
It is sending an enter key, not the ASCII key, and not a return key.
Yeah.
What you try, and just as, this is just to see if that's the problem. Instead of hitting enter, hit control enter, or perhaps shift enter. It might be shift. Okay. It depends, right? But that should tell you whether or not the problem is inherent in the Mac or in that particular keyboard.
That's interesting. Yeah, on my Chrome, enter and return do the same thing.
Right. And his, it clearly do. Yeah. I mean, again,
well, I have one key that you can switch between.
Right.
Some keyboards that have a completely separate enter key are physically sending a different code than the return
key. Right, exactly. So
different ASCII.
Try that and at least tell you if that's what the problem is. And instead of replacing your whole Mac Mini, you replace a keyboard.
Yeah. Simpler.
Good.
Cheaper.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Joe. Thanks. Yeah, that's one of the things that we all have to kind of remember is that there are...
Not all keyboards are compatible across platforms.
There are a lot of accessories that are designed only to work with one system or the other. They're only designed to work with Windows, or they're only designed to work with a Mac, and they don't do the other well. That was a problem for a long time with very inexpensive Windows laptops. They had a modem in them, a Wi-Fi thing that would not work if you weren't using Windows, because half of the driver came from Windows itself, and it was a long time before Linux was able to reverse engineer that that section of the code and make it compatible. So there were a lot of people using laptops that had to buy dongles to do Wi-Fi because they could not use the internal Wi-Fi modem. And that's also true of some keyboards. They are designed specifically to work with one operating system, not another. And if you try to use them on a different operating system, they may not work well. Microsoft had that problem originally with a lot of their branded keyboards back when they were making their own keyboard. Well, branding their own keyboards. They did not work with non-Windows systems properly.
And I guarantee you, a lot of our listeners out there don't know what a dongle is.
Yeah,
yeah, it's the it's a USB connector, whatever you used to call them dongles.
Yeah,
it
was a key verification.
We call them the adapter you need to connect one
device to
another. So we'd call these dongles. Right. But the other difference between the Windows keyboard and the Mac keyboard is the control option and command on the Mac keyboard is control Windows and Alt. On the Windows keyboard,
right,
and they're in a different order,
right.
So I have a Windows keyboard on my Mac. Every key lights up different colors, and I can make it do crazy things.
Cool.
But I couldn't get that Alt and Command,
right,
in my mind working right.
Right.
So I got a keyboard mapper and switched them.
There you go. That's how it works.
But then the key label didn't match, so I had to print a sticker. So the key label matched.
Never
you
satisfied.
You need one of those keyboards that every key is a little LED.
Every key's a screen, yeah. So the one I do have has got LED lights underneath it, but every key's not a screen. But I've seen those. They're, a lot of times they're marketed into the gaming community, so you do chords together to string a whole bunch of keys, and that's how they can kill you so fast when you're playing a game.
Right.
The best person I knew that was the queen of keyboard macros.
Oh, yeah.
Was our late friend Esther. Esther Vale.
Yep.
She had sheets up for all her macros.
4.5 by 11 sheets, by the way.
Yeah, of macros to do different things. I mean, if it was possible to do various key combinations and make a macro out of it, Esther did it. And she memorized them all too. And boom, 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 boom. And she, but I can do it this way. And boom. Okay. Yeah. I still remember
it. It was designed to help her up run the board and do all of that stuff. Yeah, she was really good at it.
I still remember people being amazed by Control C and Control V.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have to retype everything.
Right.
That was the first best thing computers could do was copy and paste.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that's one thing I like about Linux. You can use the up and down arrow to bring when you're in a terminal, Windows terminal, mm-hmm. to bring back the various key commands that you've typed.
Right.
You know, cycle through them and then, oh, yeah, there's that one again. I need it. Boom. Hit enter and
yeah.
You what?
Yeah, you can do that from the command line in Linux,
yeah.
too. All right. Oh, here it is. This is a story. On Wednesday, Microsoft said it is beginning to roll out for iMessage in Windows 11 via the rollout support for iMessage in Windows 11 via the Phone Link app with some major limitations. Microsoft previously announced this feature as part of other planned Windows updates that it revealed in February, including AI built into the search bar, of course, and the addition of Tabs functionality to the Notepad app. Ooh. Phone Link for iPhone users was available in an early preview to Windows Insiders, but Wednesday marked the beginning of the public rollout. Phone Link has been around for a long time, but it previously only worked with Android phones. Now it also works with iPhones, but the feature set is comparatively limited. The basics are more or less there, though. iPhone users can use their Windows PC to make and take calls, read and respond to text messages, see notifications, access their iOS contacts list. Unfortunately, they won't be able to participate in group messaging conversations, nor will they be able to send or receive images or videos. Furthermore, the Phone Link features that are supported will only work while the phone is continually connected to the PC wirelessly via Bluetooth. And that might be something that Francis should try. Instead of connecting with a cord, connect via Bluetooth and see if that works.
iTunes can do connections over Wi-Fi, but you have to turn it on first while you're connected with USB.
Okay, then. That certainly made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
Even though
iTunes is 20 years old when we didn't have all these fancy technologies.
Right. Even though the implementation here is more limited than most users would like, it's a small step forward for integrating iPhones and Windows PCs, something many people surely will be happy to see. And don't call me Shirley. How did your wife handle that? By the numbers, the iPhone is much more popular than the Mac, and there are many people who use a Windows laptop or desktop, but also use an iPhone. Sure, Apple has offered apps like iCloud for Windows to handle things like bookmark syncing and the like, but it never felt as natural as it should be given how many people are in this situation. Apple has guarded its iMessage platform fiercely, such that iMessage's biggest downside for many users compared to alternatives is that you must have an Apple device to use it. Now you still need to own one, but you can still at least use your Windows PC to engage with iMessage on a basic level. Microsoft said this feature will roll out to users' PCs over the next few weeks. Most people will have access already, but others will have to wait. Phone Link for iPhone will require iOS 14 or later and Windows 11, not Windows 7, 8, or 10. It also doesn't work with iPads. But other than that, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Excited to pair your Windows computer to your iPhone? We know Francis is. Give us a call on your iPhone, apparently, at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
Yeah, in the very beginning, the iPhone was almost an also-ran because BlackBerry and Palm, you know, were the kings. And then Apple released the Windows version of it, and it really took off then. So there's a lot of Windows people that have iPhones.
Well, and we've been saying for years, Apple is really now a phone company.
Yeah.
They sell way more iPhones than they do computers anymore.
When they took the word computer out of their official name.
Right. So there are a lot of iPhone users who don't live in the Mac ecosystem. They still live in the Windows ecosystem or even the Linux ecosystem. But you need, and there are programs to do, you know, iTunes-like things on Linux as well, but you can now connect. One of the things I've always liked is because I have an Android phone, Google has a couple of programs that let me called Messages for Web is one of them. And if you go to Google's Messages for Web page, you can actually make phone calls from your computer and do messaging from your computer. So particularly if I'm in a fairly long exchange with a couple of people, you know who you are. I instead of having to type on my phone or even talk to my phone, I can do it all from the keyboard.
Sometimes it's easier on a bigger screen with a real keyboard.
Exactly. And so that's been available for a very long time for Android owners. And iPhone owners and Windows could do that with Android people, too. iPhone users were kind of out in the cold with that, but this new product will help at first. Like I said, it doesn't do iPads yet, if ever, I don't know, but it doesn't do iPads, but it will do iPhones, and it's beginning to roll out, and it requires Bluetooth as opposed to a wired connection.
I forgot to set up my bigger screen with a keyboard to monitor the stream.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, that's – there are a lot of connectivity problems between the various ecosystems. You know, there's the Apple ecosystem, which includes the Mac OS and iOS. There's the Linux operating system. There's the Android ecosystem. There's the Android ecosystem. There's the Windows ecosystem. And there are a couple of minor ones, but those are the main ones. And getting them to interoperate has always been a problem. One of the things that was a real problem for a long time was iMessages. Mm-hmm. Apple was I don't know what they thought.
They initially said iMessage was going to be open source and available on other platforms.
Right, and then so, it wasn't.
And there's a confusion between iMessage and text message. So iMessage is Apple's device-to-device, end-to-end encrypted messaging system
right.
that Apple devices can use.
Right.
The same app called Messages can also be used to send unencrypted text messages
right.
to non-Apple users.
And that's that blue versus green or whatever those colors were.
Blue bubble versus green bubble. So you're using the same app to send two different types of messages without realizing it.
Right.
Text messages are unencrypted, and anyone could read them along the way. And there's a huge problem in simjacking, where someone can hijack someone's SIM and get all their messages. That's why we don't recommend text messaging as a two-factor code, because text is not secure.
Right.
But iMessage for secure messaging only works on Apple devices. And there are other messaging platforms that are cross-platform.
Right.
That don't work with Apple's iMessage. So you need an iMessage app. You need a Threema app. You need the WhatsApp app. Moxie Marlin Spikes Telegram app. There are other end-to-end encrypted apps. And in the rest of the world, WhatsApp is very popular. And so you may end up with three different messaging apps on your system, three or four, depending on who you're messaging and where they live. And a lot of us remember in the olden days when ICQ was so popular or AIM, there were programs like Adium that supported a dozen different messaging platforms. And so it didn't matter what platform the other person was on, your one program could talk to them.
Right.
And in these days of proprietary codes and programs, we don't have that anymore.
Well, one of the things that Google and Microsoft have been pushing is RCS.
Yeah.
Rich Communication Services, which is end-to-end encryption for messaging. Apple seems to refuse to want to use it. And we don't know why. I mean, sure, they've got their own protocol, but
Nobody
else is using their protocol. So right now, two of the three ecosystems can talk to each other end-to-end encrypted, and Apple is left out. I don't know if Apple assumes that people are going to say, oh, my God, I must get iMessage. I better throw away everything I own and buy an Apple phone.
That came out in one of the discovery processes during the Fortnite lawsuit, where somebody said, we don't want to make iMessage for Android because then that will stop people from buying an iPhone.
Right.
Probably not.
Probably not.
People are going to buy iPhones if they want to buy iPhones.
Right.
Although I have heard of groups of friends where everyone's a blue bubble except that one green person where they eventually shame them into getting an iPhone.
Well, if you're shamed into getting an iPhone because you have a green bubble, you're probably not somebody I want as a friend anyway.
Yeah, really.
So I don't much care. But
spend that kind of money just
to ludicrous just to have
a
blue bubble.
Friend.
Yeah, right. But yeah, it seems to me that there's a certain ego boo involved in iMessage. You know, it's an ego thing, not a technology thing. They just don't, you know, they don't want somebody else's code to be in the ascendant. And I think that's, you know, fine, but you're going to find that you've got a real issue when it comes to interoperability, even in the ecosystem of one person, right? If in one family, if I've got an Android phone and my daughter has an iPhone, we're going to have trouble communicating. I do not want to have trouble communicating with my daughter.
Yeah.
So she's going to have to put an app on her phone that is non-Apple that works correctly. And that means iMessage doesn't get used anyway. So what is the point?
Well, that's one of the complaints about RCS is not all the carriers are implementing it the same way.
They're all getting there, but they're not there yet.
So if you're on Verizon, you can't have an encrypted conversation with someone on T-Mobile.
Right.
And so that's the usual reason being touted as Apple not getting into it yet, is it doesn't work everywhere yet. But if they got into it, maybe it would push the other ones along.
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
What are we doing? We're doing a show. We're still on the radio? Yeah. Unbelievable. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Fetter.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 34 minutes after the hour, apparently, we are Sound Bites.
And he said this job wouldn't be that tough.
It's not for
running
you.
Running a board is simple.
Yeah. We have Walter from Greece on the line. What's up, Walter?
Hello there, all. We've got an interesting problem getting to a website. We came upon it just 2 days ago. One of our medical providers no longer accepts our insurance, so we went to the insurance website and looked at who are accepted providers. And we went to one of them, and on all our machines, whether it's our desktop, laptops, Chromebook tablet, Fire tablet, and any of the browsers, Firefox, Chrome, X browser, whatever, it hangs there. The one site just hangs there. It says it's connecting to ormsurvey.com, and it times out. Meanwhile, my wife can go ahead on her Android phone, put in the website, and it pops up immediately.
Huh.
ORM Survey, that sounds like a crap webpage wanting you to fill out surveys. What's
something called Patient Track.
Right. It's something like that. But apparently, though, as I said, my wife's phone, it comes on immediately. And when I talked to the provider, she was using her phone, Android phone, and it comes up, and somebody was using their Mac phone, and no problem. But here, we're wondering, because it comes on, whether we have a problem here at home, whether it's through the Ethernet cable or wireless, and we are using DSL through the Frontier modem, that it won't come up. It just hangs. Do you think that there's a setting that's in the modem that stops it?
Well, it sounds like it's being blocked somewhere.
Now, I have on the modem, it does have firewall settings, and it's set to medium. And I can go for maximum security, minimum security, or no security, or custom.
Right.
You could try turning it off temporarily, because maybe it thinks what I thought. ORM Survey, that sounds like one of those crappy survey websites. Let's block that.
Yeah, block it.
Yeah. The other thing you can do is whitelist that site.
Okay.
Usually any router that gives you the option to turn on security will have somewhere a whitelist where you can say, you know, ormsurvey.com is okay.
Okay.
So I would try either of those before I got too crazy trying anything else.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because that's why I didn't want to change anything yet. I figured right. I'd talk to you first and see what there is. I mean, there are some advanced settings, too, and it says, any changes made in this section may affect your device's performance and configuration. Do you want to proceed? And it's like, well, I don't know if I should click into that to see where the whitelisting might be.
Well, yeah, check the manual.
Okay.
And look for whitelisting and see where that is. And then, you know, as Steve said, you could try just momentarily turning off security.
Yep.
And see if you can get to the site. And if you can get to the site, then that problem is that it's being blocked by your router and you can set it in the whitelist.
Okay.
You could try going to the Patient Track parent website. That's track without a C, T-R-A-K,
right.
And try the login command there and see if getting to the parent site lets you then get to the login site separately.
Or just go to ormsurvey.com.
That's the one that
right, and
he
that's
said
I'm saying you
working.
Can do that from the browser itself, and if you can't get in there, that tells you something, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. I'll give that a try, then. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, Walter. Have fun.
I see their certificate renewed April 3rd.
Sound Bites, your name?
maybe
Blake, where are you calling from?
If he wasn't,
okay, hold on.
If he hasn't tried it in the last couple of weeks, maybe because the certificate had expired. But then you should get a different message that says the certificate has expired. Do you want to trust this website or not?
Right.
And if it renewed on April 3rd, then he should be able to get into it now.
Right. Although he may have it cached.
Yeah. Cert is from GoDaddy, so that's a known good cert company. Although GoDaddy has other reputation issues.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Blake from Canandaigua, New York. Hi, Blake, what's up?
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. I'm getting ready to buy a new Windows 11 computer, and I was wondering if one of you guys was buying a brand new Windows 11 computer, once you get your password in, are there things you do, like get rid of stuff or add stuff?
Well,
you know,
one thing you definitely want to do before anything else is put Revo Uninstaller on it.
Yeah, I use that now with my old one.
Yeah,
that should be the first thing you do is install that.
Second thing you do is then go to the Security Tango webpage and install. Do one of the dances there. And put those recommended products on there.
Yeah, the Malwarebytes and the Soupy anti-spyware for Windows 11.
And an antivirus program.
And then depending on where you get the computer from, many times it's loaded with bloatware that is used to pay back those companies. So it'll come with a free trial of X, and X paid that brand to put it on there. So you can go through the Windows Ad Remove programs.
I'd use Revo.
Thank you. After you get Revo installed, remove all those extra programs you don't need anymore.
Because it'll go into the registry and get rid of that extra stuff.
Right.
Whereas if you use Windows Remove, Add Remove, all it does is turn off a bit, and it just still leaves all that bloatware still hanging around on your computer.
Right. Right. So go ahead.
One of you has a shop, right?
Yes, Steve does.
We generally just Macintosh, though. We service Windows machines, but we...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I guess we sell them, too, but we usually tuck you into a Mac.
What if I bought a Windows 11 and brought it to your shop? Could you get rid of all that stuff for me?
Yeah, we can do that. We generally like the HP and Lenovo brands when we do sell PCs.
Yeah, we have all HP. We've been using HP for years, printers, everything.
Yep.
And one more question. I've been using, for a PDF reader, what's the name of it? I can't believe I can't remember.
Foxit?
Yes. And now I've read a little bit. They say it's a security risk now, the way Adobe used to be. Is that, well, you know, you can read all kinds of things, but...
Well, the PDF format itself can be a security risk because it's easy to hide malicious code in specially crafted PDF files. So it doesn't matter which reader you're using to read them. The PDF file itself can be a security issue. The reader should catch that type of problem. Your antivirus, anti-malware program should catch it when it downloads first.
I guess I'll stick with it. All I do is read. You know, I don't do anything.
Well, here's
else
the
with
thing.
It.
It was 2 years ago now. Foxit published a security update to fix a high-severity remote code execution vulnerability. It also has security warnings that a lot of people turn off because they get them every time they download a PDF. Well, yes, because those PDFs are not secure, so leave that on.
Right.
But it's...
And didn't I read that Microsoft is building in a PDF reader to Windows?
Yeah.
So you don't need to download something else?
Yeah, I'm not sure I...
Trust it.
Yeah.
Trust it, but okay.
I think it's built into Edge. So Edge...
Oh boy, yeah.
Edge can read PDFs.
Just another thing don't want to trust.
Yeah.
Right. So the other thing to do before you bring your computer to Steve is go through your... Because this will save everybody time. Go through the list of programs on your new computer and check off the ones you don't want.
I see.
Right, so that instead of Steve having to sit there and say, do you want Candy Crush? You've already indicated no, you do not.
Yep.
And where is Steve? The address?
It's 7716 Victor Menden Road, which is Route 251 in Victor. And we're between Eastview Mall and the Village of Victor.
And it's at MacAv. It's
Mac-Av.com. Right. Yep.
And your hours?
Monday through Thursday is 10 to 6, Friday 10 to 5, and Saturday 9 to 1.
Okay. And should I make an appointment?
That's best, yeah. You can go to our website and fill out a service request ticket.
Okay. And what's the actual name for the...
MacAv.
MacAv.
And the site is mac-av.com, as in Macintosh Avenue, MacAv. Right.
Our first big retail store was on Monroe Ave, so we were MacAv on Monroe Ave.
Right.
Okay, well, thanks, guys.
Yep, thank you, Blake.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's a thing that we don't talk about often enough. When you buy a Windows computer, you know, they say, well, you've got to have a 128 gig hard drive. Well, guess what? Well over half of that is taken up with bloatware, mm-hmm. stuff that Microsoft adds to your computer because they're paid to, that you may not care about. You may not play Candy Crush, and you may not need half of the extra apps that are on there. So when you get a new computer, as Dave says, download Revo Uninstaller is the first thing you do, but then use it to go through your machine and remove the programs you do not really want anymore. You'd be amazed at how much extra space you end up with. For example, if you are not if you're not a person who uses Microsoft Teams, why are you letting it load every time you run Windows?
Or Xbox.
Or the Xbox code or any of that other stuff.
One of the other things, and they don't pay me to say this or anything else, but one of the other features I like about Revo paid version is now they offer one that you can put on a stick. So if you've got multiple computers in the house that you want to clean up from time to time, you can put it on this USB drive, put it in, and run it. Now, the cool thing about the paid version that you can put on there is instead of having to do one after the other of uninstalling, with the paid version of Revo Uninstaller, you can select a bunch of programs. So I can say, select six of them. Say, uninstall these. It'll go ahead and do it. You don't have to wait for each one and then go back there and select another one and then select another. It'll do a bunch of them for you. So, and it's got a lot of good cleanup features also built in for cleaning up, like Nick was saying, of extra stuff within Windows that they put in there, which is honestly bloatware.
Yeah. And again, you know, if you've got a, if you've got 16 gig of RAM and a terabyte hard drive, you don't care about that.
Yeah.
Let it all load up at the beginning. Let it all sit there in memory. You don't care. But for those of you who bought lower-end computers, you might prefer to remove that stuff, particularly things like Teams and Xbox and a couple of other things, Skype and stuff like that, that Microsoft loads in the background, whether you expect to have it or not, whether you want it or not. And you... if you don't need it loading, why are you taking that time at the beginning of the system to do, of the thing to do that? And yep, and why are you letting it take up your memory
and
when you don't need to?
With the switch from spinning hard drives to SSDs, a lot of computers that used to come with a 1 terabyte hard drive are now coming with a 128 gig SSD. Because SSDs are more expensive than spinning drives. So suddenly we're back to small hard drives again.
Right. So and when you have a 128 gig machine and a 128 gig hard drive, and you only have 50 gig free, it's not really a lot. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. I think, again, is this you again, Steve?
This is I again. Yes, you can't get rid of me, Nick. I'm sorry.
And we try.
I know. When you're talking about Revo Uninstaller, I love it. It's a wonderful thing. But you should probably explain to people, you've got three options, minimum, normal, and max, basically, how deep it goes in the system, and explain to people which one they should choose for their uninstall.
Steve, please turn down your radio in the background.
I apologize. I meant to do that and did not.
All right, so when you talk about the levels of Revo One installer, the thing you're mostly talking, well, talking about two things. One is how deep it goes into your system, mm-hmm. and the other is how much time it takes.
Yeah, I would think time is unimportant. It's how deep it goes in your system.
Right.
Because that can damage your machine if you go too far.
Right. The big thing about Revo is that it can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. So going at the lowest level is probably good enough for most people.
Even the normal.
Yeah, even or the normal level.
Yeah, normal, I'd say.
But going into the high version.
Yeah, the advanced, I wouldn't go into the advanced. If you leave it at normal level, that's for the most part, you know, very safe for anybody to use.
Right.
It just digs out some more of the tentacles that program has put in there and pulls them out, thus making your registry smaller, Steve.
And one of the problems that going too deep can do is there's a lot of shared DLLs and shared right. libraries. And if it removes something that one program didn't need but another program does, that other program can stop working.
The golden rule for any of these programs, and particularly for Revo, is if you don't know what it does, leave it alone.
Yep.
So when you go in there and you see Candy Crush, yeah, get rid of it.
Yeah.
If you go in there and see a DLL,
or any
don't
other,
touch it.
Any other Windows program or commercial program, you know, like Xbox or that type of stuff, yeah, you could remove that. But if you're getting into some of the Windows-based products within there, no, leave them alone.
We just had that happen. Coincidentally, with the small hard drive size, customer brought their computer in that had a 128 gig drive that was full, so he deleted something called library because he didn't think he needed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wouldn't boot anymore.
Yep.
Yes, that's true. It won't boot anymore
without the system library.
Kind
that's
of
exactly
needs it.
Right. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Steve. If you have to be aware of what it is. This is a very powerful system.
Don't get click happy.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Except the minimum in all things for something like Revo, because it can be very dangerous. And as always, before you do anything like that, back up your data.
Revo backs it up.
Yeah, that backs it up automatically.
Yeah, but I always say you don't have enough backups.
Yep.
Well, this is of the registry. This is of the registry.
Right, I'm talking about the programs. Because if you do manage to unboot your system,
mm-hmm.
You're going to lose all that other stuff too. So make sure you have backups of that.
Yep.
Thank you very much. I just, you know, people don't realize that you've got three choices of how deep you want to go, and some guidance would be nice.
If you're a novice user, then the default normal is probably fine. And if you're adventurous, still keep with normal.
right. Only if you're a guru.
Well, like I say, if you're going down the list and you see something that says Windows system .. say DLL. No, just because you don't realize what that is, and it's don't go doing that. But if it's a Candy Crush or
Teams or Skype, and you don't use any of those,
or some other math program or something else that you downloaded and installed, keyboard shortcut program. Yeah, you can go ahead and get rid of that if you installed it. Then you can get rid of it.
One of the big ones that we see a lot of people ask about is, what is this .NET framework?
Right.
Well, that's how a lot of programs are written. Do not remove .NET. That will break a lot of programs.
Right. There's just there are a lot of programs. Age of Empires used to be installed. Castle Siege used to be. A lot of games.
I would suggest, just as a generic statement, is again, like I say about emails, if you have to think about opening them up, delete them. The same with the programs. If you have any doubt whether you should delete it or not, leave it alone.
Right.
Do not delete it.
Or if you look at it and say, I don't know what this does, move on.
Yeah. Don't touch it.
Find someone who does know if you're really curious.
And right. Or write that program down, do some research, and see what it does.
Right. And there are some borderline programs, right? Paint 3D, for example. Mm-hmm. Are you ever going to use it? If no, you can safely delete it. Voice recorder, same thing. But if you think you might want them in the future, leave them there.
Or Skype. Skype's another one that they...
Skype. People are using, other... a lot of people are on, what's it called?
TikTok?
No.
Zoom?
What?
Go to meeting?
Zoom? Go to meeting?
No. Zoom.
Zoom.
Thank you. A lot of people are on Zoom now. They don't use Skype. If you don't use Skype, it's a very big program, and it automatically loads when you start Windows. Well, the background part of it automatically loads when you start Windows, and that slows your machine down starting.
And so does Zoom. So if you installed Zoom for that one meeting you needed, and you don't need it anymore...
Get rid of it.
Uninstall Zoom. Get rid of that thing trying to load all the time.
Right. Or when you do want to run it from the browser, not from the app.
Or when you go to your task manager and start up and tell it not to start when Windows does. Yeah.
You can do that too, but again, you're still taking up space in your hard drive. And really the point of a Revo Uninstaller is to A, make boot up faster, and B, get rid of bloatware that you don't need cluttering up your hard drive anymore.
Nope.
So, yeah, but the problem with us talking about this now is that every use case is different.
Yeah.
But the generic overview is think about each program that's installed and whether you will ever use it.
If you gotta think too much, don't touch it.
Right. And if you don't know what it is, don't touch it. And if you think you might use it, don't touch it. But if you look at something and say, I do not need this, then you can get rid of it. Because many of those, if it's a Microsoft program like Teams or Skype, you can always re-download it again if you absolutely must have it. But, Teams is really a business thing. So if your company doesn't use Teams, or you're a retired gentleman of leisure, then you don't need Teams. Why are you loading it every time you load Windows?
And why did they even make Teams? It's 90% Skype.
Right.
Because they're Microsoft.
Because they're Microsoft and they can. And they charge more for Teams to businesses. That's the point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's really there's a lot involved in we quite facilely say, oh, Revo Uninstaller. But there's a lot to it that you have to pay attention to and really think about when you use a program like that.
Which is why I called.
That's why you should call. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'll see you next week.
Yes, you will. Thanks.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty. That was an important thing. We don't say it often enough, but when you use a program like any of the more powerful programs we talk about, think. And if you don't understand something, leave it alone. Don't handle something just because you don't get it. We've seen so many people who, as Steve said, removed a directory that they think they don't need anymore, but they don't understand what it is, and they end up making their system non-bootable. That's probably not an optimal result. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. Where did the time go? I want to thank Dave Enright.
Keeps on slipping into the future.
I was going to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank each of you who called in. I want to thank almost everybody who contributed to the chat. No, I do want to thank all of you who contributed to the chat. We are done for another week. Please be good to one another this week. Make sure that you are backing yourself up. Make sure that those all of your data are backed up in multiple places. And we will see you in just 166 hours. Like I said, be good to one another, will you?